Thanks, Simon. My name's Steve, I'm an addict.
Hi, Steve. Hi.
Oh. Yeah, it's good to be here. It's always good to be in a meeting. I'll be 50 in a few weeks' time, and until I was 45, I didn't have a clue what was wrong with me. And I started to find out I was always very uncomfortable. I didn't really know it was that. I always thought it was about something somebody did to me that made me feel that way. I didn't know it was a spiritual thing that was causing my discomfort. And the discomfort was quite extreme for me. I really, you know, it was really quite a not very nice place I dwelt in. I come from a family, I've got three sisters, and I did have a mum and dad. My mum stayed at home, looked after the kids. My dad was a policeman, and I hated his guts for a long time. In fact, I hated a lot of things. But in recovery, I found out how much alike we are. I didn't know he was dead for years. But only after coming into recovery that I found out he was an alcoholic and was able to see that. So I can kind of identify much more with him. I always thought somebody else was responsible for the way I felt. And at school, my closest mate, I loved going to his house. His mum was lovely, a little Irish woman. It was a lovely house, so they were really a nice family. She even said to me one day, "Stephen, you make a lovely Catholic." I thought, "That's nice, that's nice." Anyway, I was in touch with him for, it seemed like forever. But I hadn't spoken to him for about 24 years. He was in Australia. And then I met up with another old friend. And I spoke to him on the phone. He lives in Melbourne, as done for all that time. And we were having a chat, and I said to him, "I've had a drink for a while." And he said, "Nor have I." I said, "Did you just stop?" He said, "No, I go to AA." Now, he got sober 2 weeks before I got clean, the other side of the world. But what that showed me was that for all his idyllic background and lovely mum, it didn't stop him ending up in the same place as me. So that answered a lot of the questions about me looking outside for what was wrong with me. And, so I don't really do that anymore. It's just about me, accepting who I am. And the fact that I'm here now and able to do something about it. So I came to the first ever contact I had with NA was in a detox in South London, and on a Thursday night some people came in who I didn't like the look of because I thought they were from Bermondsey, and they were taking a meeting. I said, "I'm not going in there, they're not brainwashing me." Well, the next time I ended up in a place where I could go to an NA meeting, I couldn't get there quick enough. And I had to wait because I was in one of those therapeutic places where they had people believe that if you looked at all your issues, you wouldn't use again. I'm one of the few that hasn't used again. And I didn't really look at any issues. I just stayed there, made a connection with the fellowship, and when I left there, knew where to go. Thank God I knew where to go, because I knew I was going to go, but I didn't know if I would have the courage to go and meet people when the time came. But I did. And for the first 6 months, I thought, well, I'll see if I like it. And then maybe I'll look for a sponsor. And then I decided to look for a sponsor. That was all fear, because when I decided to look for a sponsor, I wasn't brave enough to ask any of the people I wanted to sponsor me. There were three or four. I thought, yeah, he's the one. And I didn't ask them, I'd ask somebody else. Once I'd asked somebody else, I didn't have any problem going up to the same people and say, "I was going to ask you to be my sponsor," but I couldn't do it at the time. So, I kind of did some stuff with this first sponsor for probably 8, 9, 10 months. But the connection wasn't quite right. I stayed clean. And then I got to thinking, what happens when I pass you? In fact, I even said it and he gave me a funny look. But I didn't see me staying in the same place that I saw was happening there. So I yeah, then I got really brave and I let go, which was quite something for me to say, actually, thank you. It's really, to let go of thinking, how's he going to feel? And think about what was I doing. So I did that, and then I had a couple of people, well, it had been a couple of people, but I'd kind of, there was one person I had in mind, but I thought, well, I'm not going to make a decision until I've let go of this sponsor. And the following Saturday, I saw this man, and I asked him to sponsor me. And he made a little chat, and he made a couple of suggestions, which I followed. And in fact, it's been a series of suggestions that I've followed. And things have changed a lot. My life's much different. I'm a different person. Just step one, my using, I drank quite early, but not that often, because, you know, I was a bit scared living in my house. I was terrified of my dad. I remember getting drunk very, very young at a wedding and liking that. And then occasionally at night, or if they were out, I'd go to the sideboard and take a quick swig of the rum, because I loved that feeling that I was left with from it. And then as soon as I could start going to the pub, I used to go. And by the time I was 16 and had my first job, I knew that if I had £1.05, I could buy 7 pints. And that was my thinking before I went to the pub at that age. And, you know, and then within a matter of months, I think my first drug was acid. And because I didn't have many yet, so I worked the other way around. I did the things nobody else would do first and worked out. You know, then within a year of that, I was begging someone to inject a barbiturate into me. And, all right, as long as you don't tell anyone. Yeah, I remember that. So, and then within a year and a half of that, I was lying in a hospital, having been run over and almost killed whilst under the influence of Mandrax and whiskey. Then, just after my 21st birthday, my first hit of heroin in the public toilets in Highbury Fields, you know, and the water coming out of the bowl. And that was my very first hit. It wasn't something I was reduced to. That was where I started. So that's kind of, like, by the time I'm 21, I think I've earned my seat here by then. But it took me another 23, 24 years to get here. And it didn't really change much. There were some times I was only drinking, but I was only drinking quite a lot. You know, and puffing quite a lot, you know, and then if I, you know, it just was quite messy, really. You know, at the end of my using, I was in a flat off the Woolworth Road that turned into a crack house. It was full of people. There was yardies walking about with guns, and I was walking around banging my head off the wall saying, let me die, somebody help me die. And I didn't, you know. At one time I walked out of my house, as people started arriving back from whatever they were doing during the day, I started putting warm clothes on, there was just something going on. And I walked out and I didn't come back for 2 weeks. I'd slept rough because it felt better than where I was living. And I tried different ways to kill myself during that time, and it didn't happen, so in the end I came back. And then I kind of started to seek help. Somebody had spoken to me previously. Anyway, so from there, by the end of that was kind of November-ish, by the end of January I was in a detox and began to feel safe for the first time ever. Things have just gone on since then. So I kind of had an idea what step one was. Unmanageability, it still surprises me what, you know, I was listening to somebody I listened to it today as well, talking about unmanageability not being all that outside stuff, it's the inside stuff. Well, that applied to me as well. And so then I come to step two, and that's where my mind opened, you know, and I kind of, you know, there was something going on in the rooms of NA that I liked, you know, that kept me coming back, and I saw some hope for me there, you know, and I saw that people who came to the meetings and worked a program, they were the ones that really drew me. You know, once I got the courage to connect with those people, they were the ones that drew me. So the next thing for me to do was, well, actually, by this time I found somebody I trusted. So I made a decision based on that trust. And I, I've set to work on a course of action, sometimes described as rigorous. And the best thing I've ever done. Best thing I've ever done. And I was speaking about this whilst I was having something to eat before I came out, and the step four for me wasn't what I hear, big, long, unable to finish thing. I just did it. You know, sometimes stuff comes up that I missed, and that's okay, I'll share it now. But I did what I needed to do. And what I found was, I had no resentments before I started my step four. When I come to share my step five, we got to the end of the resentments after 10.5 hours and decided to come back the next day and finish it. And when I finished it, the whole thing the following day, I felt okay. It was that first day where I really felt lightened, because the resentments were the things that caused me most of my anguish and pain, and being able to see that I did have some, and what they were like, and, you know, and through that, being able today to recognise when I'm getting one and deal with it, rather than let it fester, and cause me all sorts of pain. I mean, last night I was round here to take my shirt back and then had a sauna. I thought I'd go to a meeting, and I was hungry and tired by this time, and my thinking had gone, you know, just like it always was, because I was always hungry and usually tired. I didn't know I was hungry because I'd always been hungry. And my journey home was a nightmare. But I knew all I had to do was get home and sleep and I'd be okay. I didn't have to go and use or drink. I knew what my problem was. It was my thinking, and it had gone because I looked after myself properly. So, yeah, I'd done step four and five and then went back. And what I saw, my defects were all about me. They were all about myself. That's what it was. I saw me when I looked at it. And, I learned a prayer to use to have them taken away when necessary and when I remember to use it. Then I went and made a list of people I'd harmed. Took it from my step four. And some of those people I just can't find. Some of those people are probably dead. Some I've made amends to. Some I will make amends to. But life's, you know, my life's changed. And today, what's the time? It's right, good timing. And today I keep inventory. I'm fairly good at it, you know. And for me to be fairly good at anything is a vast improvement. You know, I'm fairly good at it today. And, you know, and I have worked on getting a closer contact with the God of my understanding, which is, to have that is just, it's amazing. You know, I've got that with me. It helps me cope with me. and sometimes external things, you know, because I would come back to me and my God. And then, you know, step 12, which is why I came here, you know, came here, I heard about spiritual awakening. And when I heard it or read it, it sounds lovely, it kind of flows along quite melodic. But I didn't understand, and I still don't, what it was going to be like, because it keeps happening. But it's fantastic. It's, you know, it's just, for me, it's an ongoing awakening. You know, I see things and hear things that I couldn't see and hear before. That's my experience of what it was like before and what I did about it. And as I say, my life's okay today. You know, when I was at school, I was so shut down, I didn't do any work really, because I thought it's best if I just don't. And when I leave school, I'll just get a job and get married and get a house and have kids like everyone else. But as I said, I'm nearly 50 and I've had a flat for about 3 years and I've got a job. The rest might come and it might not. But I'm happy. And I have that peace of mind that I wanted. I nearly said craved, and I'm not sure about how that works. So, but I desperately wanted peace of mind. The thing that would allow me to sit down in a place on my own, if need be, and feel okay. Feel okay. You know? And for that, I'm eternally grateful. And I'll leave it there.
Thanks, Steve.